So next up will be the second of one of the Healthcare Associated Infection Community Interface Site presentations, and this will be presented by Dr. Ruth Linfield, the State Epidemiologist and Medical Director at the Minnesota Department of Health, and the Co-Principal Investigator of the Minnesota Emerging Infections Program.
Thank you. And so Rich really set this up. This is a second project that really was piggybacked on the project that Richard described. And before I discuss it, though, I do want to make a plug for a poster that was just presented by Jane Harper, which is on the Antimicrobial Stewardship Program Toolkit that was developed by Minnesota. And if you didn't have an opportunity to go to that session, there are some extra copies over there. So I thought I would start by just giving a bit of a background on antibiotic resistance and nursing homes, because there has been a lot of excitement, a lot of discussion recently about antibiotic resistance. And nursing homes certainly are an area where this is really a very large problem. It is really one that is very challenging to get at because there are many factors involved. We do know from a variety of studies that antibiotic resistance is widespread and increasing in many nursing homes. It is a debilitated population in nursing homes. We know that there's increased morbidity and mortality associated with antimicrobial resistant infections. And these infections are hard to treat. They may require agents with increased adverse effects. They may require the use of parenteral agents. And as we know, many of the individuals in nursing homes are on a variety of medications, and certainly there can be an increase in drug interactions, particularly in this group, when one has to use a variety of antimicrobials. Of great concern is that the antimicrobial resistant pathogens can spread to other residents and to patients in other facilities. And again, it's a debilitated population. One thing that we all need to keep in mind, and I know you all know this, but we have to remind ourselves again and again when we think about how to approach this problem of antimicrobial resistance, is that antibiotic use is the biggest driver of antibiotic resistance. So let's talk about antibiotic use in nursing homes. Antibiotics are frequently prescribed. They comprise about 40% of all nursing home prescriptions. And over the course of a year, between 50 and 70% of nursing home residents will receive one or more courses of antibiotics. There's a high risk of side effects and adverse events associated with antibiotic use. And as you know, antibiotic use is a major risk factor for a Clostridium difficile infection. In a number of studies, people have looked at the appropriateness of antibiotics in nursing homes and have found between 25 and 75% of antibiotics prescribed are inappropriate. In this review of antibiotic use among 221 post-acute care admissions in 7 nursing homes, they found that 48%, so almost half of the residents, received at least one antibiotic. The rate of antibiotic use was 29 courses per 1,000 resident days, and 50% of the antibiotics used were initiated by the hospital. And we were talking a bit earlier about short-term stay and post-acute care. And so that short-term stay population is, as Marianne had mentioned, frequently includes those who were discharged from an acute care facility. Challenges with nursing home prescribing practices are numerous. 67% of antibiotic prescriptions are initiated over the phone based on a an assessment made by a surrogate. Surrogate meaning someone who is not the person who typically takes care of that patient. 43% of nursing home initiated antibiotic courses had no documentation of infection in the medical record. In this study of long-term care facilities in Ontario, they looked at antibiotic use patterns over the course of a year. They found that 75% of the nursing home residents in this population of 50,000 in nursing homes received an antibiotic. 44% of the antibiotic courses were more than 7 days in length, and in a mixed logistic model of resident level factors, only the prescriber was associated with the resident receiving prolonged treatment. There were more than 2,600 different physicians who prescribed antibiotics, and it's a little similar to the opioids. 21% of the prescribers were responsible for more than 80% of the antibiotics. A subset of providers were identified as long-duration prescribers with an average length of antibiotic course of more than 11 days. Prescribing tendencies were not driven by differences in patient demographic characteristics, comorbidities, or care needs. So having this information, I think, enables us to target our stewardship efforts and to be reminded that there is a group of prescribers that we really need to educate. As mentioned, there is a lot of interest over the past couple of years nationally on the issues of antibiotic resistance. However, a lot of the efforts in addressing antibiotic overuse and resistance have been targeted at acute care. And as I'm going to demonstrate, really, we need to be concerned about long-term care. So this is a part of this pilot work that Richard had described, and I'm going to talk specifically on the antibiotic use component. The objectives were to assess the feasibility of conducting a point prevalence survey in nursing homes. And as Richard had mentioned, we did a similar antibiotic use prevalence in acute care facilities in the EIPs. So this was a smaller effort to understand how we can go about conducting really a bigger effort in determining antibiotic use in this setting. The idea of the pilot was not only to assess the feasibility, but to inform data collection methods, to identify training needs, and to obtain preliminary data on antibiotic use prevalence and the quality of antibiotic use documentation. This latter part I just want to emphasize because it is really a contrast when one looks at documentation in nursing homes compared with acute care facilities. There really are a variety of places where the information can be documented, if it is documented, and so it can be a challenge to get at the source of the prescribing data, the indication, the length, etc. Again, these were 9 nursing homes and 4 EIP sites. Connecticut, the palindrome, Richard, Minnesota, New Mexico, New York, and it occurred between December 2013 and May 2014. The eligibility requirements, again, were a CMS-certified nursing home or skilled nursing facility, and we aimed for facilities that had at least 120 licensed beds. The methods in this component were that medical records were reviewed by trained EIP staff. We looked for antibiotics being prescribed and taken on the survey day or the day prior, and we looked for evidence of 6 prescribing elements: the start date, duration, route, rationale, treatment site, and treatment review, whether there was documentation after the initial prescribing that they either went back and reassessed, or they looked at culture results, or some sort of documentation of a review of the of providing antibiotics. We looked at resident characteristics, and we again looked at prevalence per 100 residents. We also looked at completeness of antibiotic use documentation, so having all those six prescribing elements. Again, to review facility characteristics, the median number of beds was 130. The range in the nursing homes reviewed was between 104 and 229. Of note, there was a median of 4 attending physicians with a range of 1 to 24, and the number of days a medical director was on site per week. The median was 1, and the range was 1 to 5. So this table talks about the antibiotic use prevalence by resident characteristics. And I'd like you to focus again, you're going to see some similar themes here to Richard's presentation. Where we found significant differences was in short-term versus long-term stay. So that there was an antibiotic use prevalence of 21.2 in the short-term residents versus 9.7 in the long-term residents. Presence of device and antibiotic use prevalence of 23.5 compared to 10.3 when there was not a device. Devices being urinary catheter, vascular device, ventilator, PEG, or J-tube. There were not significant differences by gender or by age or by presence of diabetes, and the overall prevalence of antibiotic use amongst 1,272 residents was 11.7. When we look at how good the documentation was, whether all elements were present, overall, in 54%, all of those six elements were present, with a range of 33% to 77% per nursing home. The duration was documented for about 73%, and that was at the low end of things being documented, compared with the start date, the route, and the site, which were at 96%. Indication was documented for 89% and treatment review 74%. When we look at antibiotic use by site and by rationale, a number of things come out. First, just to take a look at this table, there were 160 antibiotic courses administered. 106 or 66% were given therapeutically, so for treatment. 37 or 23% were given for prophylaxis. And in 17 courses, there was not a rationale documented, whether it was for therapeutic or prophylactic purposes. The most common sites, which accounted for 58% of the antibiotics, or antimicrobials rather, given, were for urinary tract and respiratory tract infections. So actually, Richard, your preconceived notions were right on. Urinary tract infections accounted for the most. About two-thirds of the antibiotics given for urinary tract infections were given therapeutically, and 31% prophylactically, 42% of respiratory tract antibiotics were given therapeutically, and 31% prophylactically. And in quite a few of the respiratory tract infections, there was not a rationale documented. And you can see the other sites listed. Of the top 10 antimicrobials administered, oseltamivir was most frequently administered, but in 44% of the courses of oseltamivir, a rationale was not given. Of the 106 treatment courses given for treatment, so given therapeutically and not prophylactically, doxycycline, cefalexin, ciprofloxacin, and trimethoprim sulfa were the most common antibiotics administered. So to conclude, overall, the prevalence of the antimicrobials in this pilot of 9 nursing homes was 12%, higher in short stay residents, 21%, versus long stay residents, about 10%, higher if a device was present, 24%, versus not, 10%. Approximately one-third of antibiotic use was for urinary tract treatments, 67%, or prophylaxis, 31% of the treatment for UTIs. One-quarter of antibiotics were given for respiratory tract treatment. 42% of these were indicated for treatment, 31% for prophylaxis. And about half of the antimicrobials administered lack documentation of one or more prescribing elements. However, there is wide variation by nursing homes. Just to mention a few limitations, there were only 9 nursing homes and 4 EIP sites. Most patients were long stay residents, and so the generalizability of this is not clear. The information that we were able to glean was really dependent on documentation, which can be not good in nursing homes. And so we are using this to plan a larger study. We want to better define the antibiotic use epidemiology to assess the appropriateness and to guide antimicrobial stewardship recommendations and efforts for nursing homes. You may be aware of the core elements of hospital antibiotic stewardship programs that CDC has produced. They are planning to have nursing home core elements come out in August. And as I alluded to, the work done by Jane Harper and her group, there is an antimicrobial stewardship program toolkit available on the Minnesota Department of Health website. I would like to acknowledge my colleagues and collaborators, and again, the participating nursing home residents and staff, and would be happy to take a question or two. Thank you.
I'm Linda Bell with South Carolina. Very nice talk. I understand you'll do further evaluations, but did you have any opportunity to look at the appropriateness of the prophylactic indications? Because certainly you can see how Tamiflu would be indicated, but are some of those, like, I know the numbers are small, but prophylaxis for things like osteo and skin infections and whatnot, if those could be looked at as just outright as determined to be inappropriate?
So, wonderful question. We certainly have the same concerns. And it is a bit challenging to evaluate appropriateness. We are embarking on an acute care look at appropriateness of antibiotics, and some of the lessons that we'll learn from that, we will hopefully apply to nursing homes. So that's probably something we will try to incorporate. The way to do that is to utilize recommendations from guidelines, but it can be really hard in nursing homes because they're so little documented. So trying to get inside the clinician's head can be challenging in an acute care situation, all the more in a nursing home situation. Having said that, it's really important for us to understand where to target our educational efforts. So thank you. Agreed.
Hi, Maureen from Nebraska. Ruth, this is really important work. Thank you. It seems to me that appropriateness for Tamiflu versus true antibiotics may be different, and I don't know if I missed this, but did you find that there was more appropriate use for Tamiflu, particularly in the prophylaxis, than for antibiotics for a respiratory infection?
So for this pilot, we just documented yes or no. We didn't look at appropriateness. But certainly I think everyone agrees that there are guidelines for the use of oseltamivir when you're concerned about influenza that has entered a nursing home and you want to protect these vulnerable individuals. And we are hoping to include that look in the next large version of this.
Thank you for that presentation. Quick question. You mentioned that about a third of the antibiotics prescribed were for urinary tract infections. And I was wondering if you were able to tease out asymptomatic bacteriuria or if they were true infections based on Mercury's definition.
Such a great, great question and such an important point. I think those of us who have looked at nursing homes know the just huge amount of asymptomatic bacteriuria that goes on, and then, you know, the patient has a fall, and for some reason somebody sends a urine culture, and then there are some white cells and bugs in the urine culture, and people feel compelled to treat it. And we've done some work in Minnesota, and we have found there is a lot of treatment for asymptomatic bacteriuria. That was not done here.
I don't think you're alone. I think
we're all seeing that. And it is really, that's an area we all have to really work hard to educate the folks working in nursing homes. Yeah, thank you.
So I think we'll just take one more question, and then I invite anyone who has additional questions for Ruth to talk to her after.
Okay. Did you do this during the flu season intentionally, and would you recommend doing that to capture? And secondly, I'm just curious if any of the facilities in the context that already had antibiotic stewardship programs in place just understand the population. Thanks.
Okay, I'm going to answer your second question first. So here is just a table on facility stewardship practices amongst the 9 nursing homes. And, you know, they didn't typically have official antibiotic stewardship programs, but 8 of the 9 did provide antibiotic use training to nursing staff. 7 of the 9 did some follow-up after a new antibiotic was started, or at least that was their policy. 6 of the 9 provided feedback on prescribing to medical staff. 1 of the 9 used standardized orders for prescriptions. None of them restricted the use of any antibiotics. We did do the prevalence survey from December to May. It could have been done any time during that time period. So, some of the sites might have captured the influenza season or the wave. Some may not have. And that was, I think, taken because it was actually at that point in the year when everything had gone through IRB and we had gotten the nursing homes agreement, and that's when we did this study. Thank you.